This is Mike Rodenbaugh from the business constituency. Danny Younger, you're here from the NCUC.
I think he's on mute, but he is.
Yep, there we go.
Yeah, Danny's here.
Good. Patrick Jones.
I'm here.
Olaf.
Yeah.
Jocelyn from the Registrars.
Good morning.
Jocelyn Frank. Greg Ruth from the ISPs.
Yep, I'm here.
Margie Nilam from the Registrars.
Yep.
And Christina Rosette from the IPC.
Yep.
All right, and if Jeff comes on, I'll hopefully Glenn or I'll catch him coming on, or he'll announce himself. I don't think...
Number Danny.
Danny's here.
Danny's here. So, a few things to discuss today. The agenda, as I see it, is to finalize the RFI text so that we can get it off the staff to pretty it up and distribute. I think we should also address Christina's questions to the UDRP providers that she circulated yesterday or the day before. And I'd like to hear from Olaf and Patrick whether they have any information, various issues that they've been looking into.
Okay.
And any other business that people think we ought to be addressing today?
Mike, it's Christina. One thing I would be helpful to me is to get clarification as to what the expectations are with regard to the distribution of constituency-specific questions.
Okay.
And then collection of those answers. But we can put that at the bottom of the list.
Yeah, actually, I'll put that second because I think it kind of will dovetail after the RFI.
Okay.
And then you had your EDRP question. I'm just taking a note here. And staff updates. All right. So the RFI was recirculated again last night by Olaf. Thank you. Adding in Christina's question as number five. I think we should just basically open the floor for any comments, questions, suggestions about anything within the RFI. Otherwise, I think we should consider it finished and send it off to staff.
The only comment that I have gotten from a couple people is that they're concerned that the questions might be too phrased, too legalistic, too legalistic a manner. That's the word that people kept using. And, you know, obviously we're trying to get at very specific information, but I am wondering whether it might be possible to make them perhaps a little simpler while still getting at the same information.
Mm-hmm. I think that's probably, you know, a fair point, something we can look at, although I don't want to be spending too much time, you know, debating text of the question.
Oh, no, I agree. It's just, you know, if we can come up with...
You think, Olaf and Patrick, do you think that's something that ICANN staff can help with?
Well, we hope we can. Well, Patrick, over to you. I think the questions can be simplified, indeed, but of course, at risk of oversimplifying.
Right.
I just wonder if we would have free hands to do some. Yeah, well, it sounds like dumbing down if it's too legalistic, or while still keeping the gist of the question fair and square, but to make it clear, possibly. And if we would have free hands to do that, we might need to make some modifications anyway. That's... We put it up for posting. But
well, how about,
Rick,
how about
what do you think about it?
Yeah, Olaf, I agree. I think, you know, we can definitely make an attempt at making the language simpler. It would probably involve another pass through with this ad hoc group, but we want to make sure we don't lose the core of the question.
Right, absolutely.
Right.
Maybe I could make a suggestion on letter C. After imposing registry access deletion fees charged to registrars for, just put in the words disproportionate deletes.
It's noted.
Yeah, and I had wanted to put examples of terms in there, so I did draft a little parenthetical along there. I actually like that because my parenthetical then will explain a little bit more. So Danny, it would read, imposing registry excess deletion fees charged to registrars for disproportionate deletes. Open parens, for example, in .org, PIR registry charges 5 cents per deleted domain if more than 90% of domains are deleted in a given time period.
End Works for me.
Yeah, I think that's good.
Okay.
Hey, Mike, this is Jonathan.
Hey, Jonathan.
The questions as they stand, there's some slight tweaks we can make to it, but Marilyn Cade made a really fantastic suggestion that there be some sort of FAQ that goes alongside this. Could that not maybe add some color to,
bring it back into common language, what the questions are, to help people understand what they're responding to?
I think that would be helpful.
I think that could be helpful as well. I'm a little concerned about time to do that, so I had to ask Marilyn, specifically what sorts of things she would like in an FAQ. Of course, we can take comments on that from anyone on the call, and obviously on the list, since I just asked that question yesterday. But we are referring to the issues report with a link, and we've got the basic definitions in here. So I was, frankly, not real sure what an FAQ ought to accomplish that those
just
documents
just to,
and definitions don't.
Yeah, I think it would work for maybe Christine's point that it would help, bring common language. And I just wanted to offer that I could draft something up, perhaps, that could help with that.
This is Olof. I'm a little concerned about the length of the RFI, and so some kind of structuring where you have, whatever additions, rather as an annex to it, just not to lose track and people get put off by too lengthy documents and
right.
Too lengthy questions. So I'm a little concerned about adding them into the questions themselves. But what you seem to suggest, I think, that's workable.
I would suggest that in terms of organizationally, we could just put a sentence after the introduction paragraph that says, we've prepared, click here to access the FAQs that we've prepared. And that way it's not in the same document. If they don't feel that they need them, they don't need to bother.
I think I'm generally okay with that. I never like to turn down offers to drafting assistance for volunteer effort. So, again, my main concern is the timing to have that reviewed by everybody and by staff and have it still linked into this. I really would like to have this thing out there next week, and I'm pretty doubtful that Jonathan will draft something. We can get it essentially approved by this group within a few days. So basically that's going to put it back to at least a week from now.
Well, certainly the goal wouldn't be to delay anything. The goal would be more to actually just remove the confusion around the request. And I think it could be reasonably accomplished. Could we maybe set a deadline, and if it's not done by then we just omit it?
I would be comfortable with that. What do other folks think about the FAQ idea?
This is Margie. I think it's a good idea to include FAQs. I'm not sure how many people know the kind of, this information, and it'd be useful for them to at least refer to it in the manner Christina described.
Rather than the lengthier issues report, I can certainly see that would be valuable. Okay. Sounds like there's nobody really against the idea of doing an FAQ, so that means we ought to move forward with it. Jonathan, thanks for volunteering. You think you could have a draft around to the list within the next day or so?
Yeah, probably by week's end at the latest, yeah.
Okay. And then the goal will be to have that reviewed by everybody on the list and finalized in our next call next Wednesday.
I think it's reasonably accomplished. I'll take that on.
Okay. Any other comments, questions, issues with the RFI as it stands right now?
Yeah, this is Margie. I apologize, I wasn't on the prior call. Is there a reason we don't ask the person to identify whether they've actually been a target of domain tasting or they've experienced it in any way?
Well, that's a good point. It was raised by Marilyn as well. I considered that certainly question three, who is harmed by domain tasting, gets at that. Also, number 15, would you like to provide any specific stats be useful? I would like to get more directly at that point, although I was thinking, and I think this dovetails in with what Christina brought up at the outset, that the constituencies in sending out the RFI to its members is certainly free to say whatever they want about it and pose additional questions for that matter.
Right, but you won't get uniform responses. If you're trying to identify how many people have been harmed by tasting, and that's a question that is posed to everybody, you'll have a statistical, some sort of statistics to refer to that out of 5,000 responses or whatever, 10% who knows? Maybe it's not useful, but.
Yeah, I think I understand what you're saying. I think that the group is really not considering this to be a statistical survey in any sense, but more a free-form request for information.
Okay.
I don't think anybody would disagree. It's going to be very subjective. Right, as opposed to quantitative. So it's, the wider the net, the better. It seems like it's covered under who's harmed.
I mean, I think that really screams out, if I'm reading this and I'm harmed, then obviously I'm going to say that in answer to question number three. I'm not sure how much more really direct we can or need to be, especially for a document that's intended to go out to everybody, not just and brand owners and others who probably have been harmed by the practice.
Okay.
But you have a more specific suggestion as to what the question should look like?
I think not just brand owners. It could be, registrants that were unable to register the name that they, were looking for. I think you just say something like, have you been harmed by domain tasting, and that's a yes, no, and, please explain kind of question. I mean, I don't think it's inconsistent with the rest of, or duplicative of the rest of the survey here.
So basically inserting another question maybe after number three that says simply, do you believe that you have been harmed by domain tasting? If so, how?
Yes.
Possibly as number six, since well, if you look at then we have an individual question. Have you requested the deletion of a domain name?
Right.
So
right.
Just,
right.
Well, it would be follow another logical stream, but I would rather put it as number six.
Okay.
But something right along the lines, could you perhaps suggest the wording of that one? To get all the details you want to mention in it?
Sure.
Well, I think it's simple. I think it's going to read, Margie, correct me if you've got other comments, but the way I've written it here is, do you believe you have been harmed by domain tasting? Yes or no? If yes, in what way?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. All right. I manage that.
I'm keeping a draft here as well with the earlier comments you made, Olaf, so I'll send it to you when we're done.
Right. Well, sorry to say, but my pen or head or whatever is too slow to get the exact phrasing of what you wanted to include or you suggested to include under C. So if you could drop me a line with that phrasing, I would be happy.
Yep, I have that as well. And then I had made one other change to number 15, just moving a clause to make it more readable. I think that the edit was wrong, and I just simply changed some wording there, but I don't think it changed the substance. Okay. Any other? I think that's a good suggestion, Margie. Thanks. Any other suggestions or issues with the RFI?
I actually have a question about number 15, although I've just lost my document again.
Hey, Christina.
With question 15, are we asking them if they're willing to provide it, or are we asking them to actually provide it? Because if we want them to actually provide the information right then and there, I think we need to say that more clearly.
Yeah, how about changing it from would you like to provide to please provide?
That's fine. I mean, I just wanted to make sure that I understood what we were getting at there.
Good point.
That's a good point. So the way I, and just so I'm not too cryptic about what I changed here, I'll just read 15 as I have it now. Please provide any specific statistical or factual information that can be corroborated by a third party or identify any expert persons on any issues raised by this RFI. Period.
I have the sentences reversed, but that makes more sense.
Yeah, it does.
And then there's still the parenthetical, please identify and explain how they would aid the community discussion on this topic. Okay. Another good edit. Any others? Okay. Then let's move forward. I will send this around to Olaf and to the entire list as soon as the call is over. And Jonathan will work up the FAQ.
And I and Patrick will toss a further drafting between us to try to simplify.
Okay.
And de-legalese or whatever.
All right, that'll be appreciated. I would say that I think it's reasonably straightforward right now. Okay. Constituency-specific questions. Christina, would you just talk a little bit of where you're going with that?
Well, I had thought during our last call we had agreed that it would be useful to have constituency-specific questions because those would allow us to get at certain aspects of the issue that may be unique to a particular constituency without having to have an RFI that's, you know, hundreds, many, many, many questions long. So I had put some questions together, at least, you know, kind of my first draft for what IPC members would be asked. And what I don't have a particularly good sense for is, you know, is the IPC supposed to be distributing these itself, and if so, collecting the responses and forwarding them on? Is there going to be, you know, is the idea that on whatever page the RFI is provided or a link to it is provided, that there will also be links to each of these constituency-specific groups of questions? I just am trying to get a sense as to what I need to start telling people to do, because if I need to start, for example, you know, getting on the phone with INTA and IPO and ABA and blah, 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 and saying, look, you know, there's these questions coming out. I'm going to need you to distribute these to your members. Then I need to start doing that sooner rather than later. But if, on the other hand, it's going to be part of what's available on the ICANN site and it's just an awareness thing, that's kind of a completely different set of things I need to do. I don't know if that was clear.
I think so, or at least to me. I think what I would suggest is constituencies are free to come up with their own questions and ask them of their constituency members in any way they like. And obviously that information can, and I would say should, be fed back to this group. But we're not at the stage where we're asking, you know, for constituency statements, obviously.
Right.
And I think that, you know, the fact is that constituency by constituency, there are different issues, and the leaders of those constituencies are probably in the best position to get at them through focused questions without taking the time of the entire group and having to come to the consensus on what sort of questions a constituency should ask of its own members.
Right.
So my suggestion would be when the constituency sends out the RFI, or shortly thereafter, the constituency sends out its own questions as well, if it chooses to do so.
So the RFI is going to be distributed only by the constituencies, or is it also
no.
posted? Okay.
It's going to be posted, but I certainly think it's wise for the constituencies to
send
it out.
All right. I just wanted to clarify. All right. Thanks.
This is all up here. I think we should reflect a little about the future distribution, because this dovetails very much into how we see the outcome as well. All right, the main idea is to have it posted on the ICANN website and with possibilities of, that we try to get as much as possible of the responses back the same way through the email address at the ICANN website. What we intend to do is also to contact the regional liaisons to get information about this spread, so to support the awareness campaign, by regional activities of a general nature to what the regional liaisons have as direct contacts in the regions from the ICANN side. And then I realized, all right, we have the constituency track. I would nevertheless say that it would perhaps be a good thing if we can get all and most of the answers compiled, or rather fed back through the ICANN channels. And I wonder if it would be worthwhile to add question number 16, or I think we're up to 17 now, saying something like any other comments, which would enable constituencies' specific questions or answers to those to be introduced in that way. That's a very open-ended question at the end. Does that make sense?
So I think, let me see if I understood you precisely, Olaf. Are you suggesting that it's not a good idea to have the constituencies asking their own questions, but instead to do that through this RFI via an open-ended question?
No, rather that they could respond to the RFI as posted, but adding comments, and for that reason we could, the constituencies could certainly, in their internal distribution, highlight that, or add questions, and those could be compiled in question number 17 on the posted RFI, saying any other comments, and that's where such comments could be introduced without them being actually made on the posted RFI, but rather internally. In the awareness campaign internally in the constituencies, they would be aware of that, we have specific questions here that we would like to provide answers to, and those can be incorporated under...
I see. So when the constituencies send out the RFI to their members, they could also have a cover note saying, we suggest you consider these additional questions that we think are relevant to our constituency members, and provide your responses in number 16.
Or 17, as it would be.
Mm-hmm. I have it as 16 at this point, but anyway.
Yeah, we added Margie's question as well.
Yeah, that did that already, but anyway.
My only concern with doing that, Olaf, is that first off, I think you're going to have to make that any other comment block fairly long. And I think, frankly, it'll be for a data, I guess, compilation purposes is probably the best way to phrase it. I mean, I would think that if you've got kind of this huge any other comments and somebody is from the ITC is basically putting their answers to all 14 of my questions in there, whoever the poor soul is that has to go through those any other comments answers and kind of distill them out is going to have quite a job ahead of themselves.
Yeah.
Probably true. So maybe we should keep that. I just offered it as an idea.
Right. No, I don't. I think we should have an any other comments, but I'm wondering whether maybe another way to go about it is to include, you know, kind of subject to each constituency signing off, a link to each constituency's questions. And I know that as far as the IPC is concerned, you know, we are happy to do that, but I think if we're going to do that, we would want to make sure that whoever's filling this out has to identify themselves and their affiliation so that, you know, we can verify that they are, in fact, an IPC member.
It becomes pretty complex, and
right.
You touched upon something else, which we, I don't know, if we have decided upon that, whether we make a fill-out form or actually post the questions for to be responded to in free form. And I was rather thinking about the second option so far, but
well,
I don't know.
How about if we leave it up to the constituencies to ask any additional questions they'd like to ask of their members and then compile those in a form
sure.
that they can send back to the group?
Sure.
That's probably better.
Okay. Any objections to that or additional comments on this issue? Okay. So we'll make sure in the meeting notes that we give heads up to all of the constituencies to start thinking about the questions they might like to ask of their members in addition to this RFI.
This is Danny. I've got a question relating to the purpose of the AGP as stated in this RFI. Specifically, the language reads, AGP allows for the correction of typos and other errors by registrants. I think we're probably overlooking the fact that the AGP also deals with issues associated with fraudulent credit card transactions.
Yeah.
Mm. Yes. Good point. Should we maybe just take out that sentence?
From the issues report, but I think you've certainly got a point there.
What if we just deleted the sentence? And then, obviously, the registrars, where it says that, you know... That's not the question. The question is who benefits from domain tasting, not who benefits from the AGP.
Or we could perhaps inject an inter alia, allows inter alia for the correction of typos and other errors by registrants. And as a matter of fact, errors by registrants, this, in a certain sense, covers fraudulent card transactions as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was thinking of including those types of questions in the registrar-specific, questions, because I think our constituents are going to want to explain what the AGB process is, you know, legitimately used for.
Yep. So, Olaf, I like your suggestion, if everyone else in the group does, to simply add, among other things, AGP allows, among other things, for the correction of typos, et cetera. Any comments?
We can rely on Olaf to come up with appropriate wording.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I feel the responsibility heavy on my shoulders.
As long as it's not Latin.
I'm no good at Latin. Well, it's very many other languages, but not Latin.
Well, you threw out inter alia.
Yeah, that's the extent of my Latin.
All right, about mine too.
Over at Securitas, hence strength and reliability. So, well,
Okay, so any other issues on the RFI or the issue about constituency-specific questions that we should address on the call, or should we move on? All right. Moving on then. Christina sent around a couple other draft questions that she would propose to send to UDRP providers. Not sure if everyone has had a chance to look at those yet. She sent them on Monday. I'm just pulling up my copy here.
Your body's hectically reading.
Yeah.
Going through a flood of emails.
Here we go.
And we have had a pretty active email list, which is good. So I just opened it up. Christina, you want to give any sort of brief intro as to what you were trying to do?
It's my understanding that and frankly my experience, that in many cases the quote-unquote traditional remedies for cyber squatting are frankly useless when you're talking about pasting because of the shortness of the five-day cycle and external factors. Some of those external factors are unique to the UDRP providers, namely, for example, the proceeding does not formally commence until the provider reviews the complaint, makes sure that it complies with the requisite formalities and that the complainant has paid its fee, and transmits the complaint to the respondent and the registrant. And it's my understanding that because that process is not instantaneous, and in my experience has varied anywhere from 1 to 5 days, it's not uncommon, purportedly, for the registrant to have changed by the time that the proceeding is ready to commence, at which point the proceeding can't commence because the respondent identified in the complaint is no longer the registrant, and that where there is an administrative deficiency of the type where the respondent identified in the complaint is not actually the registrant anymore, the UDRP rules basically require the provider to send the complaint back to the complainant to rectify it. And one of the things that I was trying to get at here is, you know, I know what my experience has been. I certainly don't expect or even purport to represent that my experience is representative. But this is really trying to get at, you know, is this really true? Are these concerns and objections of trademark owners seeking to utilize the UDRP, are they based in, you know, demonstrable fact? And that was really what I was trying to get at. For example, you know, how long does it take you to process the complaint and you know, transmit it, which actually starts the proceeding? You know, have you notified complainants of these deficiencies? And basically, number two is not at all worded in a way that I'm 100% satisfied with, but I just couldn't come up with wording that was perfect. That basically where the registrant in the who is record is no longer the registrant identified as the complainant, and the circumstances suggest that it's because the registrant has changed. In other words, it's not a typographical error by the complainant, which is actually something that the providers will kick it back for. And that, you know, in those circumstances, how many proceedings are we talking about? You know, how many domain names are we talking about? What do you require them to do? Can it be rectified? Are you seeing the same registrants over and over again? Are you seeing the same registrars over and over again? You know, do you keep data as to how often this happens? And if you don't keep data or you're not willing to share the data that you have, you know, are there patterns or trends that you are willing to share? And then question number four is one that Jason wanted asked. So, you know, I'm open to adding additional questions that we think will give us information that's useful. I mean, these are the only ones that I frankly could come up with because by the time I was done with the IPC questions, I was out of questions.
It's a great set of questions. And so you're looking to have the UDRP provider identify where there's a pattern with a registrar?
Well, if they track that, yes.
So what the concern that I'd have
and I can't speak for the entire registrar constituency, but, you know, as a registrar voice, you know, there are many registrars who do receive sort of pattern of these, but may work closely, you know, with the intellectual property rights owner or representative to transfer the domains, and thus that would result in a stay. So what the questionnaire seems to be weighted towards is the negative aspect, but it doesn't necessarily paint the registrar in a good light. And it would be good to actually have some sort of a fair statistic there that might illustrate where, you know, there's a very cooperative registrar. So at least if they're taking some medicine, they get some sugar with it too.
How would the UDRP provider know? I guess I'm not sure I'm entirely following.
So the UDRP provider contacts the registrar to inform them to lock the who is.
Right.
And, you know, in some cases, the person who's the complainant also, you know, reaches out directly in some sort of a contact to the registrant. And quite often, it's unfortunately not well documented, but quite often, the registrant who has registered the domain and the complainant actually come to some sort of arrangement and a stay happens with the UDRP provider. And then the proceeding dissolves. But the UDRP provider would have information about the registrar in question. And they could, you know, assign some quantitative number to the number of stays that happen per registrar. I think that would be illustrative of kind of highlighting good and bad actors.
I guess I'm still not really following you. I mean, I understand what you're talking about, stays, and, you know, personally, I don't think it's at all commendable that a registrant makes a complaint and go to the time and expense of, you know, $7,000 up to prepare a complaint before agreeing to transfer the domain name. But independent of that, I'm not really quite sure how I understand that the registrars are involved, and maybe I'm just not following you.
Well, in essence, you're going to have registrars who have tasting or this type of activity where it's happened in the deletion process.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have that mixed in with typical day-to-day registration activity.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in the unfortunate case where somebody has filed a UDRP, but then they maybe come back to a reasonable stance and say, hey, I could try friendly contact, see if that gets me somewhere faster. Or the registrar.
But how does that involve the registrar? I think that's the part that I'm not following. I mean, I'm happy to add it. I just need to make sure I understand it.
I'm saying that the statistic, in the case where some sort of friendly contact happened, the way that this is weighted, I'm trying to find the right words here. The way that this is weighted is it illustrates where there's a pattern with a registrar that might be doing domain tasting, and that pattern might only show the negative aspects of it. If the registrants of that registrar, or in whatever case, there's a friendly behavior, you're not letting them benefit from, you know, where there's been friendly resolution happening.
Okay.
Maybe.
So if somebody else can explain it to me, because let's do it offline. I don't want to take up the rest of the call, but I still just don't.
That's right.
I still just don't get. I see what you're talking about. If the parties can come to an agreement, I'm not clear on, and I'm hoping, you know, maybe Margie or somebody else from registrars can get us that, is how the registrars come into play. But again, let's do that offline or maybe on the email list, because I'm just not following. Sorry.
Maybe I could. Well, if I understand it right, it would help if we introduced a new bullet point under 3, saying something like, in what way have registrars assisted you in the proceedings?
Sure.
Something of the sort. I mean, I don't know if that would satisfy and give a little more balance to it.
Well, if you're looking for a quantitative number, like, you know, what number of cases has this registrar's name come up? Where the name's been deleted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're painting a picture of the registrar that, you know, obviously it paints them into a bad picture as a result of their registrant's actions. Mm-hmm. So it might be good to at least have them have the benefit of having some, you know, to balance that with something positive, where perhaps there's been a positive activity.
Okay. Jonathan, I think I understand where you're going with that. I think that
the best thing for you to do would be to pose a couple or one or two more bullet points as you'd like to see them asked and send those off to the list. Christina, I had one comment on number four,
mm-hmm.
which is you're limiting it to 06 and 07. I think it would be interesting to have, you know, statistical data as far back as they have it.
Okay, that's fine.
And just frankly, I just don't think they're going to have the sort of detailed information that we're asking for in number three, but no harm in asking.
Right.
I think it's something that perhaps we could do some other independent analysis on a lot of the UDRP decisions or a statistically significant sample of the UDRP decisions and come up with that sort of information ourselves some way or through staff. But I'd suggest we go ahead and ask the questions first. Okay. Any other comments or issues with this? Otherwise, we'll let Dauphin and Christina come up with a sort of final draft.
Yeah,
and
I do. Yeah, I do.
Go ahead, Bargie.
Number one, why should we also add boarding it to the registrar? Because I'm not that familiar with the process since we don't get involved in a lot of UDRP for our clients, involving our clients. But is the process that the provider sends it to the respondent and also sends it to the registrar?
Yes, but as a practical matter, under the UDRP rules, it's the transmission to the respondent.
I understand that, but at some point the registrar is asked to put the name on lock or something, right? Or
yes.
Who is.
Yes.
And that would, in a sense, you know, be relevant to our discussion because that it can no longer be dropped for domain tasting.
Okay. So just basically mirror the language of one,
mm-hmm.
but basically substitute in registrar?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
The
average time is, say, 10 days from the time that they get it or whatever, you know, 7 days, you know, the odds are that if it's involved in tasting, it's already been dropped.
Right.
And then the other question I had was, do you want to provide some... I don't know. The questions don't seem to be focused on domain tasting. They're just kind of, even though at the introduction we talk about domain tasting, do you want to add like a catch-all section that talks about, you know, do you have any, because maybe we're not thinking of, maybe they have statistics that we're not even, you know, contemplating that can show how UDRPs are affected by, you know, domain tasting activity or some sort of scenario statement to that effect.
Sure. Something kind of like that last. I don't even know what number it is anymore. The question about, you know, please provide statistics or whatever.
Right.
Because they may have something that we're just not thinking of.
That would be relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Good suggestion. Okay. I'd like to move off this topic unless else has anything they are dying to say on it. Okay. Then we'll look for a redraft on this, taking Jonathan's and Margie's suggestions into account. Okay. Then Olaf and Patrick, I'd like to turn it over to you. I know there's several different balls that you guys are juggling. The Economist, VeriSign, Bruce's email about statistics that he thought might be available. I'm wondering if you guys can comment on some of those issues for us.
I'll perhaps start with Bruce's email, and there are statistics, but those have in the monthly reports. There are statistics, or rather quarterly data, on deletes during the ad grace period, but that has been introduced only recently, so we don't have any time series of it, and since there is a 3-month quarantine before it's made public, we would suggest nevertheless that the registries provide that data to have it really up to date. And as I've understood it, it was only introduced in the very beginning of this year, but
mm-hmm.
Rick, please correct me if I'm wrong. I think you mentioned that to me, so.
Yeah, that's what Karen told me when I had asked her.
Right.
So, Patrick, do you think that that's something that that you'd be comfortable asking the registries to provide, even though the quarantine period is not over?
We can certainly ask them. I can't give an answer right now on whether they would be willing to give up that quarantine period for that data.
Of course.
We can ask them.
Okay. Mike, this is Danny. I'd specifically like to address one of Bruce's specific points, number two, where he's indicated that many names are registered are being used for possible trademark infringement,
mm-hmm.
and we could determine this by selecting a sample size of names that were registered and deleted, and then comparing those names with a database of trademarks. Is this a project that the staff is going to be undertaking?
Not immediately. That's, I would say, a pretty tall order as
well,
such. So,
can I ask you a problem with that, too? But I'll let Olaf
quest on that. And I'm not really sure whether we are cranked up to without outside help. And I would also like to turn to those who are on the intellectual property scene more deeply involved that, well, is there statistics available from companies when it comes to their experience in this regard? Well, that would be certainly be helpful if that can be made available. But to start that kind of investigation from scratch, well, to me, it sounds like a tall order where perhaps the ICANN staff wouldn't be the best.
I mean, I can tell you, I mean, from I know, I can tell you that the International Trademark Association has not done any membership-wide survey of which members, regular members, trademark owners, are A, even aware of this problem, B, tracking it, and C, have statistics. The only thing that kind of comes immediately to mind, and I'm sure that there are people on this call who will object to the even suggestion, but I'll throw it out there, is that there have been judicial actions filed in which appendices to the complaint attached lists of third-party trademarks that had been, you know, that basically third-party domains. And I'm thinking, for example, there's a lawsuit that Verizon filed that as an attachment to it, they did, you know, for each letter of the alphabet, kind of they picked one brand owner and listed all of the tasted names that their research had disclosed. You know,
are you talking about the one against Google, that one?
No.
No, the one against iReet by Verizon and by Neiman Marcus against Dotster. There's that. I mean, certainly, Christina, I think your point is that we can come up with anecdotal evidence for various companies, right? Obviously, Yahoo can put together a list of names that have been registered that correspond to our brand and then were dropped during the tasting period. I think a lot of different companies can do that. I'd like to hear a little bit from Margie, though, because I know that their brand jacking index does some of this on a more aggregate level.
Sure, and I can explain what we did. We started analyzing the whole cyber squatting problem and decided to publish this quarterly index. Our first one was 3 months ago, and our next one's coming out at the end of this month. And what we did is we selected the top 32 brands from the interbrand study of most famous brands in the world, and then we're searching new registrations that contain that brand, and then we're tracking it over a six-month period. So we actually have reports for those brands where it shows, you know, delete, drop, delete, drop, delete, drop, and it'll show the dates of the drops and the ads, and it'll also show the registrar involved. And we're, you know, we'll have aggregate data. It's from our last report, it was thousands and thousands of names. So I don't know that it's useful to provide something other than summary data and then examples of the report. But that will for sure be a snapshot on 32 brands, and it's over a six-month period.
That'll be useful. I mean, obviously, the problem with Bruce's suggestion is comparing names with a database of trademarks. I mean, you know, you can't just choose the U.S. right. database, for one right. thing. Many, many others.
Mike, this is Danny.
Yep, go ahead.
Even though there are some problems associated with Bruce's request, truth of the matter is he's asking for a statistical snapshot. Obviously, we can determine what an appropriate sample size would be, so we're not talking about an ungodly amount of work to put together this type of a study. Further, to the best of my knowledge, there are funds available, at least through the at-large process, that would allow for projects to be initiated.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this
again,
is all
the problem is what do you compare the sample to, though?
You
know, if you do that just to the database of U.S. trademarks, you're certainly undercounting by a lot.
It seems to me it'd be a very valuable study. You know, what you're saying is, by the way, it's Paul Stahur talking. What you're saying is that there's no way to tell. So it seems to me that's like not a good answer. We should attempt a study. Otherwise, how will we know?
I would be comfortable attempting some sort of study if the staff is willing to do it, if the funds are available, the resources are available. It's obviously not going to be definitive. There's simply no way. But it can give us some idea of the scope of the problem.
I'm with you. I hear that. I think that's a good idea.
And as I was suggesting, you know, that just happens to be our brand jacking index. I mean, the analysis we do for that, we could do for a generic brand, or what a generic name if you want to do some sort of comparison, you know, for something that's not a trademark, just to see. But again, you know, it's a snapshot. It's not going to be definitive survey, but that analysis can be done. We certainly can do it we just need to know what names to monitor over a six-month period, and we can do that on a daily basis for 6 months.
Yeah, the other problem with comparing it to a database of trademarks, of course, is that a lot of trademarks are also generic words. So you're going to get very high percentages of so-called conflicts.
That's true. So why don't
we agree to?
That makes sense to me too. Why don't we limit the trademark database to the trademarks that only have one trademark holder, like Neiman Marcus? Those kind of trademarks, not the ones like Register for Register.com. It's got 15 trademark holders on it.
Aren't we? This is all up here. Aren't we reinventing the wheel? If there is already this study by Mark Monitor, the brand jacking study. Isn't that, wouldn't that give indications enough?
If I gave the list, and I don't have the list, I didn't get involved in that, in how we compiled the data, but say, you know, I tell you this is the 32 names we've searched, and you can, you know, and it'll be just as an example, Pepsi and, you know, Coke and Xerox, you know, if it's names like that, and then say United is thrown in there as an example, you know, you guys can tell me what you want to see, and I can take it out of the, you know, because we already have the data. We've been compiling it at least on those 32 brands. And then, you know, if you think there's something in that 32 list that looks a little, you know, like it would be more generic as opposed to a coined term, you know, I can talk to my staff and see if they'd be willing to rerun this, results, in a limited fashion.
Yeah, so does your study tell us how, like, pervasive it is? We'd have to compare your results to, you know, let's say you found, you know, whatever, 1,000 names that were tasted during that 30-day period that had these 32 trademarks within them. How many other names were tasted during that period that didn't have any trademarks, A, and B, how many of those 1,000 names were held after the 5-day grace period, or were all those 1,000 deleted?
We're not looking at just tasting. So if the name is registered and it stays registered, it'll be in my report. You know, I mean, the problem is that we aggregate it, and then there's backup data for the aggregation. So I don't, we don't compare against. We haven't done that because it wasn't. We didn't need it for our purposes.
Yeah, but to gauge the size of the quote problem, it seems like we have to compare it to the size of how many names are saved, and whether or not these names are kept, I think, as well.
Well, and Margie, did you say that this is just all cyber squatting? This is not focusing on domain tasting?
Yeah, I mean, we analyze these brands for a 6-month period. So, you know, it's just a question of if it picks up cyber squatting or it picks up just tasting. And again, I have to talk to my people on how they did it. I haven't, you know, gone into that much specifics. But I do know that they're looking at a six-month window, and they're looking, and I've seen reports that show the registrar, the date it was registered, the date it was dropped, and the date it was picked up, and that's the information that we're aggregating.
Okay.
So you're not gonna...
That sounds like good information, but I don't know if it's enough.
That's right. But let's do this, because we're at the hour right now. Let's ask Margie, if you would, to come back to the list with an explanation of what your study would show in regards to Bruce's, you know, point two here. Can you do that?
Yeah, I have to get what Bruce is asking for, but yeah, I can.
Okay.
Can actually, then, Margie, can I also ask that you just circulate the result of the most recent study?
Yeah, I can say,
okay.
Post up the list.
That's probably. Okay, and then back to Olaf and Patrick. As to Bruce's points one and three, I think for number three, I know at least we're working on that a little bit, Newstar is, but I think that could you guys figure out whether we can get that data from all of the registries on one and three?
Well, we...
I will make an effort to try to get data and follow up on the next call. Really, the registries that we're concerned about are not all the registries. Primarily, VeriSign, Afilias, PIR, Newstar, and maybe one other one. But I'm sure that we're not really concerned about the SCLDs because tasting doesn't occur there, or most likely does not occur there.
I think you're right. For these purposes, we should focus on the big guys.
One thing that's useful is that after the last call, I did send a note to Phenomenet, and they have some data that they're gathering and will send to us.
Right. Great. Good. Okay. Anything else you guys want to share about statistics or your discussions with VeriSign or any other players about statistics? Okay.
I think Kurt is away this week as well, but have you heard anything on The Economist and his availability for calls?
No.
Okay.
We don't have an update on that yet.
Okay.
Can I ask
one
last question? For purposes of, I'm going to have the IPC get started on sending out its questions. What target response date do we need to be shooting for?
Posting plus 3 weeks, 21-day posting, sort of a standard fare.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But the post,
on...
well, I guess we're into next week, and if we conclude by the next meeting and have an agreed RFI with frequently asked questions and all of the trims and trimmings to it, well, fair estimate that we could get it posted by the same week, Friday. What do you think, Patrick? Do we have the posting authorities? Are they available? It's a little bit of holiday times right now, but is Dan around, for example?
If we have an agreed document, we can get it posted. What I'm concerned about is the length of the comment period and that it be long enough to provide those have data an opportunity to gather it and send it to us.
Yeah, so rather 21 days would be sort of the minimum.
I think 21 days is way too short, and we should, if possible, look at a longer time period, perhaps even a 45-day period, and just let the council know that it's going to take a little bit longer to gather up the data. That's just a suggestion.
Well, yeah. What is the feeling?
Well, at this point, the earliest that this thing is going to get posted is August 10th, probably the week of August 13th, optimistically. So even giving 3 weeks puts us into the first week of September, which I think is good. I think we need to allow people to get back from their August holidays, those who are so lucky. So I would suggest maybe 4 weeks, 30 days. I think 45 is probably too long. And then that gives us essentially till the middle of September.
Mike, can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
Since we're having a council meeting next week, and since next
yep.
week is the earliest that we would have anything to post, what about having you during the council meeting raise the fact that, you know, yes, the council resolution indicated we come back in September, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we want to make sure that we come back with the most complete set of statistics and data that we can. You know, can we basically get an extension?
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's just not going to be a problem.
Yeah,
the council is going to be fine with that. Our constituencies might not be as fine with it, but, you know, this is where we're at this point. There's simply not much more we can do. I agree that 3 weeks in this circumstance is probably not very good, since two of them are holidays for half the world. So why don't we shoot to get it posted early the week of August 13th and have it out for 30 days until, you know, September 15th. Does that sound reasonable to everybody?
Sounds okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Mike, one final question for Olaf, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Can Olaf at the very least provide us with a statistically valid sample of names that have been registered during the 5-day tasting period, so that at least off of those sets of names, those of us that want to attempt a study mm-hmm. might at least have something to work with?
It's a great question.
Maybe this is Patrick. Let me take that up. And I think we run into a problem with names that are deleted in the 5-day period, with names that survive the 5-day period and go on to be parked or whatever. So separating the two can be really difficult, and I'm not sure if you use a sample of famous, well-known brands to do that, or if you just use names in general.
No, I'm just talking about.
I think he's asking. He wants the list so that then he could run whatever sample he wants to against it.
So you have to get that list directly from the registry. And this is, we as staff do not have that list right now.
Yeah, but they publish it every day. They publish his own file every day.
And you can
whatever. Yeah, but you got to pay for it. Whatever, you got to pay for it if you want it every hour. But if you want it every day, it's free. You can get it today. You wait 5 days. You get the one 5 days from now. You do a difference on them. The ones that came in, the ones that went out, and you know which ones went out during that 5-day period. It's not that hard to do.
We don't need the entire zone file. We're just looking for a statistically valid sample. And
that might be 1,200 names.
It might be, you know.
So the best suggestion is that, you know, as staff, we may not have the resources to accomplish that in a fast time period. And since anyone can request the zone information, then maybe a member of the group could take that on.
Yeah.
I might be able to do that.
Is that Paul?
Yes.
Yeah. Would you be willing to work with Danny and come up with a sample that can be used by everybody?
I think I could squeeze that in the next week or two.
Thank you, Paul.
Like, you want just one day, you know, 1 5-day period, or?
Well, as Bruce indicated, within the 5-day period.
Yeah. Which 5-day period? Like okay. This week?
Pick one at random.
Okay. And is it for .com, just .com, or all the TLDs?
And make it easy. Just go with .com. We just want to get a sense, a snapshot of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one that's most active anyway.
It'll be a big, big file.
Mm-hmm. I think that definitely would be helpful, though. So thanks, Paul. Okay, anybody else have any other burning issues they want to raise? Otherwise, I think we should end the call. We're about 10 minutes over. All right. Thank you, everybody. Look forward to more discussion on the list this week and to our call next week.
you.
Okay. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.